Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host today. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington's College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. And today we have a very special guest. Steve Neavy is with us, who is the Director of Marine Operations for Washington State Ferries. And we're going to be talking about some of the inner workings of the of how the ferries are staffed, some other things, and some of the challenges they've been facing over the last couple of years. And I'd like to point out that Steve has been with Washington State Ferries for about 9 months and comes to us from England. And Steve, could you share some of your story that you're sharing us with before the show, which I found fascinating, and how you ended up to Washington State Ferries?
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. It's great to be here. So yeah, like you said, I grew up in England in the United Kingdom. I got fascinated with the maritime industry really young. My dad was in the British Navy, and my stepdad was in the British Navy, and one of his best friends was in the Merchant Marine. He was a chef on oil tankers, and I was just fascinated by what they both did. My dad was in the Falklands War on HMS Invincible, and when they returned, the families of the sailors on the ship got to go on board and kind of welcome the families home. And because Prince Andrew was on HMS Invincible, the Queen was on HMS Invincible, which my dad's ship, because she was meeting Prince Andrew back from the Falklands War. And then because she was on board, they took the Invincible out and did a race with another ship kind of for the media. And I was just obsessed from then and just hooked to, like, all I wanted to do was work on ships. Like I mentioned, I remember being in primary school at like 7, 8 years old, and the other kids were like doing show and tell about their dog or their cat or their rabbit. And I was doing show and tell about, you know, Navy warships and how many planes they had and how many guns they had and how many, you know, sailors were on board and that kind of thing. I was just obsessed. So by the time I was 16, I decided I wanted to work in the Merchant Marine. So I applied for scholarships with several shipping companies, and Chevron Shipping offered me a scholarship, which meant I could go to Southampton University and earn my license to work on ships as a deck officer and a degree in nautical science. So when I was 16, they gave me that scholarship. I flew out from London to LA by myself, 16 years old, and jumped on an oil tanker in LA, a big oil tanker. So I think at the time it was like the sixth biggest oil tanker in the world. It's called the Chevron Perth. And we sailed over to the Middle East and back via Singapore. It was like a 5.5 month trip. And then I flew back to England and went to college for 6 months. And then I did that cycle for the next 4 years or so, like 6 months at sea, 6 months at college, 6 months at sea, 6 months at college, until I gained the credits to pass the degree and get my British Coast Guard license. Once I did that, I kind of graduated. Then I started working for Chevron as a third mate. Worked there for a year as a third mate. I'd always wanted to try cruise ships, so I decided to go back to England and interviewed with Holland America, the cruise line that's based here in Seattle. Interviewed with them, was offered a job, but they put me on a waiting list and said it was going to be 9 to 12 months before they actually had an opening on a ship for me. So I kind of signed up for an agency and just did day work on, like, work on a day rate on, like, ferries and small coastal tankers. I worked on a ferry up in Scotland and coastal tankers going around the coast of the UK. And then finally, Holland America called, offered me a position on a ship that was sailing around Hawaii in the Mexican Riviera. And after a couple of weeks on the North Sea in Scotland, I was more than ready for that. So
I don't blame you.
So off I went. And then, the rest was history. So I worked my way up I started as a fourth mate with Holland America, worked my way up to first mate. When I was 25, I was first mate. So I was responsible for the whole safety department on board the ship. There was a lot of people reporting to me. And then after a couple of years of doing that, my ambition really was to be a captain with Holland America. That's what I really wanted to do. But the ship I was working on, they were planning to take it out of service and cut a section out of the ship, like a couple of decks out, and then put a new section on top with a brand new cabins and a brand new pool area and a restaurant. But they realized quickly that they needed someone that understood the ship's safety systems to come in and help them figure out how to tie in all this, like, old 25-year-old ship safety systems with all this brand new equipment that they were installing in the new section. So that was a big task to figure that out. And also there were some stability issues that they needed to resolve. So I understood the stability of that class of ship very well. So I was helping with that too. And then I was supposed to go back to the ship and be part of the crew during that retrofit, but they just said, well, why don't you just stay with us and be on the project team and come with us to the project and kind of work with class and flag to make sure all the safety systems are done correctly and pass up to code and the drawings are all updated. So I did that, and then they offered me a job as a project manager because they were going to do several more ships. So I stayed with that project team for a couple of years, living in Seattle. And then I said, okay, it's time for me to go back to sea now because I need to carry on up with my ambition to become a captain with Holland America. Got my date to go back, and they were like, oh, what if you stick around and take this job as fuel saving manager? Mm-hmm. And at that time, fuel saving was a big deal. Like, everyone was trying to figure out how they could save as much fuel as possible. And it seemed like every day consultants were knocking on the door promising that they had the next best solution to save us 20% on our annual fuel budget and all this kind of stuff. So I did that for a year, and then I said, okay, I really want to go back now. And they were like, well, what if we make you marine superintendent? And I was like, well, that'll look great on my resume if I ever want to come ashore and have a family later in life. Because at this time, I'm just a single guy living in Seattle. So they make me marine superintendent. And then I met my wife here, got married. We have two kids. Before I knew it, I was director of operations at Holland America, and it just didn't make any sense to go back. So I was director of operations for Holland America and Seabourn Cruise Lines for the last several years. When COVID hit, it was exhausting in the cruise industry. It was for ferries too, but in the cruise industry, it was brutal. Had a brutal year and a half dealing with, you know, having to tie up the whole fleet, figure out how to get the crew home because nowhere would fly them home. And we had globally like thousands of crew that we needed to get home. And by the end, I was just exhausted. And I think COVID forced a lot of people to reassess their priorities. And I was that, before COVID, I was traveling 2 or 3 weeks a month to various Holland America ships. And I just, so I'd like to get something more local where I don't have to travel as much. I saw this opportunity come up. I applied for it. And I've been in the job since October. I really love that the ships, all of the ferries and the terminals and everything I have to deal with is within driving distance of my house. Honestly, when I used to travel out to visit Holland America ships, I used to get really energized talking to the crew and then bringing their issues back to the office and seeing how we can fix them. And now I get to do that instead of flying to Florida, Australia, or Europe, or whatever. I just have to drive to, you know, Bremerton or Port Townsend and meet the crew, yeah, and get that energy that way. So I'm really enjoying it.
And then you're home at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So you came from Holland America to Washington State Ferries. And as director of operations, I assume that a lot of the things you did at Holland America are the same, like staffing, scheduling, things like that. Is that how you describe your job at Washington State Ferries? Or is there any, how would you describe your job at Washington State Ferries?
Well, Washington State Ferries, it's different. It's a little bit different from Holland America. Holland America, I was involved in a lot of global issues and, you know, making sure we had permits to operate in Antarctica and making sure, you know, we had a big training school in Holland that I had to visit every month to make sure we were kind of training captains to the standard that we required and this kind of thing. It's a little bit different here. So I'm responsible for all of the vessels and all of the terminals, making sure that they're all sufficiently staffed every day, like you said. And I'm responsible for the safety of the crew, both on the vessels and in Burma. I'm responsible for the workforce development vision of like, how are we going to get out of this issue that we're in right now where we have a shortage of crew. That's what I've mainly been working on since I started.
And I know that the COVID thing hit before you came on board, but I understand like about 120 to 130 vessel staff quit because of COVID in some way or the other. And
it's my understanding. Like, I haven't done an autopsy on how we got where we are because I haven't had time. I've just been trying to get us out of where we are. But it's my brief understanding that people were kind of afraid of the silver tsunami, they were calling it, like the upcoming retirements. Mm-hmm. but COVID really accelerated them. And a lot of folks that were planning on retiring, you know, maybe 5 years from now, were like, I'm out of here now. I'm just gonna, you know, cut bait and run. So yeah, it's really exasperated that problem.
So now the staffing, from what I understand, is set by the Coast Guard. They issue a certificate and they have to tell how many AVs and ordinaries and mates and whatnot. How has that affected the schedule? Because we're seeing these alternative schedules. I know that they're directly related. How can you describe that relationship?
Yeah, so obviously, like you just mentioned, the Coast Guard tells us how many crew each vessel has to have in order to operate, right? And if right now we staff the vessels, we're financed to staff the vessels right to that number. So if one person doesn't show up because they're right now we have a COVID spike in the region and that's affecting our crew like it's affecting everyone else. If a crew member doesn't show up and we can't find a replacement, the vessel doesn't sail if it's one person short. And they need that person, you know, in case there's a fire or an evacuation, or it's basically a safety issue. There's a certain amount of people required to be able to evacuate the ship and take care of any kind of emergency that might happen.
And to serve as part of the firefighting team.
Yeah, exactly. So the issue that we see is that we can hire those entry-level positions. You know, you can hire people off the street and they can start as a deckhand without too much issue. They need a TWIC card and a mariner's credential. The issue that we have and why boats aren't sailing mainly is because we're stuck in that our licensed deck officers, the captain and the chief mate, both need to be certified as class one pilots. It took me a while to get my head around that when I started, because I never heard of that before. But, you know, every time a cruise ship or a large cargo ship comes in from open ocean into Puget Sound, they take on a pilot, like a Puget Sound pilot, and that pilot navigates the vessel to whatever dock they're going to in Seattle or wherever they might be going. Because our vessels are operating in those waters, they technically require one of these pilots on board to operate all day. But actually, they require two. The Coast Guard says we need two pilot licenses to operate the way we operate. So it doesn't make sense to like take Puget Sound pilots on and off the boat all day. So our captains and our chief mates both have to have this class one pilotage requirement. And it's something that takes, you know, anywhere from 6 to 12 months to get, depending on several factors, like the individuals. Right now, the people are doing it on their own time with their own resources. We're setting up a program to be able to support people to hopefully help them get through quicker so they can take time off and do it on pay rather than doing it in their time off pay. But they have to ride a certain amount of trips on each route. They have to ride a certain amount of trips on routes we don't even run in case they need to move the ferry from one route to another. Then they need to take a lot of exams, draw all the charts for the area, take a bunch of exams. And if they do all that, then they graduate as a class one pilot, and then they can be a captain or a chief mate. So, you know, at Holland America, if I was short chief mates, I could just go and hire some chief mates from somewhere else and we're all good, because we didn't have that pilotage requirement. Whereas here, if I need to go, I can't just go and hire some chief mates because they won't have that pilotage requirement that our captains and chief mates do. So that's the challenge.
I guess they basically have, I know this, they have to draw the charts from memory.
Yes.
Sections, you know, put in the lights, the characteristics, all the characteristics of the chart from memory. It's quite a task.
Yeah. So we're also doing we've also built a program over the last several months to help our ABs that want to become captains go to a nautical school called MITACS down in Seattle to get their deck officer credential. That's something that the state's not really done before. Mm-hmm. People have had to do that on their own time and resource. But now we're going to pay them wages and pay for the training. So this program will help ABs go to school, get their credential, and then become deck officers. And then they'll go into a program that we're creating to be able to ride their pilotage quickly and then and fast track that.
That's a good incentive process, Steve. So if you're just joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I'm Aaron Barnett, today's host of Coastal Cafe, and we're speaking with Washington State Ferries Director of Marine Operations, Steve Nevy. The DV or Nevy? I forget.
Nevy,
right. Yeah. That's amazing.
But the exciting thing about those programs is that they've never been done before, right? So we're now taking people that have never had the resource to be able to go to school and get that credential because they can't take 4 months off and then pay for the college and not get wages. We're paying for the college, we're paying the wages. So any young people that are thinking about coming to work for Washington State Ferries, that should be a great incentive because there's going to be a plan for you to go from entry-level OS straight off the street all the way through to captain. You'll be supported in that career path. And that hasn't existed before at Ferries. And it's what we're building now to address this issue.
So what are the entry-level credentials that you mentioned earlier, like the TWCA? What are those and what would a young person need to do to go get those?
Right. The TWIC card is like a transport workers identification card. It's what you need to be able to work on a vessel or on a dock because it's considered a secure area by the Coast Guard, right? So you need to be cleared just like a TSA worker at an airport to be able to work out on the runway. You need a TWIC card to be able to work on the dock. You need a TWIC card or on the vessel and being in the pilot house or the engine room. I just recently got one. I didn't need one for Holland America, but I got one to work here. You go to basically a Staples and you bring your passport and forms and it takes a couple of weeks and you get that. It's not super difficult. It's just a background check. And then the Marine credential is just kind of, I call it a seaman's book where I'm from. It's just a mariner's credential. It's a couple of $100. We're working on how we could pay for that in advance for people. It's really difficult to figure out though, because a lot of people are saying it's a barrier to entry, but if we pay for everyone's before they even, you know, come to the first training, if people don't show up, it's a lot of wasted money. So we're trying to figure out a way of being able to kind of make sure we've secured someone's employment and then pay for them to get those credentials and to make sure we don't pay for thousands of people to get credentials and only 100 people use them, you know. So we're still working through that.
Right. And have you guys embarked on an aggressive recruiting campaign in some way and to get people in to your training sessions in the spring?
Yeah. So we used to just recruit in the spring and then lay off after the summer season, as you probably know. But we're now committed to just hiring year round and not having layoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Committed to eliminating our on-call pool, which was something that a lot of, like when you're new, you're on-call. So you just have to answer the phone and go where we send you. We're putting in measures so that we won't need an on-call pool anymore. So everyone will have a permanent watch so they'll know what their schedule is for the week. With that information, we've started working with a consultant that's going to help us put together like recruiting tools and materials and really help to kind of drive a recruitment drive for the next several years. We're planning to do an open day at Eagle Harbor later in the year. That hasn't been announced yet, but we're working on it to kind of get people through Eagle Harbor, show them the vessels that are there and the jobs and the opportunities that are available, and then take content from that day and use that to kind of help drive recruitment.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
We've got a lot of great jobs at Washington State Ferries. You know, there's deckhand jobs, there's engine room jobs, there's jobs at Eagle Harbor, plumbers and welders and pipe fitters. There's a lot of really great jobs available.
And I guess they pay well, too.
Yeah.
What's the starting wage for, say, an ordinary or an oiler? You know, an oiler is a wiper is the engine room equivalent of an ordinary.
Right. I think it's $26 an hour, if I'm not mistaken. And now we're in bargaining right now. To obviously, the unions are working to get a raise during this bargaining cycle.
Sure. Right. Have you had to work with unions before at Holland America, or was it a non-union shop there? I'm just curious.
We did, but it wasn't the same. It was very different. Like we worked with unions from all different countries, but there wasn't the same. I don't know. It was very different. It was a different environment. I think that the unions here are a lot stronger than the unions maybe that we were dealing with in international shipping.
Well, so we're in Port Townsend. Suppose some high school student is interested in, you know, pursuing something with Washington State Ferries. Who should they call? What website should they go to?
The job postings are on was.wa.gov. So was.wa.gov. You can find all of the postings there for the deck and engine jobs, and the Eagle Harbor jobs. That's the best place to start.
Would you recommend that they go get a TWID card and a Merchant Mariner's credential beforehand if they can?
If they have the means to do it, that's a great start, you know. And then, you know, like I said, we're hiring year-round. We're doing deck orientation classes year-round. So whereas before we would only do deck orientation classes, we do a two-week orientation before. When people come in off the street to work for us, they do a two-week orientation at our office in Belltown, and then they go off into the fleet after that orientation. That used to just be in the spring. Now we're committed to doing them year-round so that we can continuously hire people.
You know, when I worked for Washington State Ferries, I had to stand in line for a day at the Labor Temple in Seattle in the line, and then fill out a little card with your documents on there. That's how they hired. If for one day, they would open up books.
Yeah,
one day, 1,000 people show up. That was, God, 25 years ago. Different world. Sounds like things are getting better. Washington State Ferries since I was there. I'll tell you that.
Well, when I go out to visit with the crews, which I like to do to kind of understand what issues they're facing, I'm kind of envious, especially on days like, you know, if you're out there today on the water on a day like this, it would just be much better than sitting here in my office. You know, it's a great career.
Well, I loved working up in the islands. I worked on call for the most part. And then when I left, I was on passenger only boats, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved going up to Anacortes and working the island boats. It was so nice.
Yeah.
It was such a great experience.
Yeah.
What other things you feel like talking about in your world there that you think are worthy of note? I know that there's some electrification.
Yeah.
Happening. If you want to talk about that, or
I mean, yeah, one thing that keeps me up at night is how to attract the next generation of kids, let's say kids, to want to come and work in a maritime career. And I think one of the answers is our electrification plan. You know, we're planning to build state of the art hybrid electric ferries that will be charged when they're kind of offloading and unloading cars and passengers, and then they'll be running back and forth on electricity. I think that's something to be really excited about, because technology that's obviously going to be brand new. We're gonna have to train people on how to, you know, work with that technology. So that's exciting. So our long range plan, we called for 16 hybrid electric Olympic class ferries between now and 2040.
Wow.
We've got funding, I think 1.3 billion of the totals funded. I think it's been publicized in the media that we're having issues finding a ship builder at the moment, but hopefully that gets resolved. But it's a really exciting, like, it's one of the things that drew me to the ferries. Like when I was kind of researching for my, like whether I wanted to apply for the job or not, that electrification plan is what swung it for me. I was like, it's going to be really cool to be part of something like that, you know, kind of building the future of infrastructure there, and you can be part of that if you come and work here.
I can only imagine how big the battery bank is going to be.
Yeah.
It's a lot of batteries.
Yeah, it is.
Huh. So, well, it kind of makes sense. You know, most of the ferries go like 4 or 5 miles. They're not going that far. And you have to dock for 15, 20 minutes. So it sounds like it's quite plausible.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're pretty well advanced, you know, in starting up with electrifying the Seattle terminal and then Bainbridge and Bremerton, and then moving up to Muckleton and Clinton, and then after that, the other routes. So, you know, it'll probably be a slow process to get the whole thing completed. It's a, like I said, it's a 20-year plan, but it's exciting.
Well, that's great. So is there anything you want to, we've got a few more minutes left. Is there anything you want to share with our listeners about what to expect from Washington State Ferries? And
no, I mean, I understand that most of your listeners are from Port Townsend and that, you know, it's disappointing that we're on one boat service at the moment. We published our system restoration plan. You know, in October, we realized that we needed to go to an alternative service plan because we weren't able to provide anywhere near full service. And we needed a plan that people could rely on. And then a couple of months ago, we realized, okay, now we need to start figuring out how we're going to return to the regular service. And we didn't want to just have two boats one day and nothing the next, and then one the next and two the next, and say, oh, you're restored, oh, our bad, you're not. So we made a plan. We prioritized the routes one by one. We've restored two of those routes. We're right now working to restore Edmonds Kingston. It's had a bit of a snafu at the moment because of the COVID spike we're in, and that's really like hampering. Like a crew member will call out sick with COVID, and then you call who would be their natural relief, and they're sick too. So it's difficult. But you know, we're hoping that once we've got Edmonds Kingston done and we can move on and get to Port Townsend, so we could try and get two boats back on Port Townsend by next summer. And we're, you know, we've been given the dates of when there are important, you know, events happening in Port Townsend, and we'll try and beef up the crew, which allows us, the ferry, to carry more passengers. So we're going to try and do that on those weekends when we can, so we can try and give you more capacity. Yeah.
Sounds like you're in a sort of a one step forward, two steps back situation.
Exactly. With these COVID spikes, it really is. It really is one step forward, two steps back. Just when you think you're you're on the other side, but I think that's every industry is feeling that.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll work on some of these folks up here graduating high school in Port Townsend, Jim with them, and maybe they can help be part of the solution.
And, sounds good.
Get them going in the direction of these good jobs on the ferries.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to thank you all for joining us. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant, the UW College of Environment, and KPTV 91.9 FM. Washington Sea Grant helps people and marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education to support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And as always, a special shout out to the band Kuich for sharing their music with us at the opening and closing of this program. Thank you for listening and have a good day.